Hi, John.
Hi, Dan.
You know, it occurs to me that when I said hi, John, there was probably like a brief split second when people were like, which John? Which John is it?
Which Dan is it, honestly?
That would also be weird. But fair. Some week, it's just going to be, we're going to get a different date, Jason, and a different Dan, and they're going to have a show.
It's going to be me and Dan Frakes.
There you go. You'll have a good time. You mentioned when we talked earlier this week that you got some snow. We are getting dumped on currently.
I've heard. Yeah.
It's like it's coming down still out there. I haven't ventured outside to shovel.
And yet you didn't get a snow day. That's,
I know.
That's,
I
not
still
fair.
Have to work. My boss is a taskmaster.
Mm-hmm.
Please put that in the show notes.
Your boss likes taskmaster.
Unlike the other person on this podcast.
I didn't dislike it. I just wasn't really
and
blown
the more
away by
we
it.
Wanted you to like it, the less you were inclined to like
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Sure. I think that contributed
to it. That's
how
things work.
Yeah. There are plenty of shows that I like that. I mean, I'm really into Holy Moly, which is this stupid, mini golf show. And I showed an episode to some friends and they were completely baffled
unfazed.
By what I saw in it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
I understand that.
It happens.
It happens to the best of us and also us.
Yeah. exactly.
So quiet week, Apple technology wise,
Apple,
I guess.
Yeah, right.
Other stuff,
everyone,
we're not talking about
everyone's
other things.
Just staring at a screen. going, oh no.
I did write a piece for our site for Six Colors about a smart lock that I've been using for several months.
Yeah, which I think you talked about that on the Rebound.
On the Rebound as well. And I wrote a review of it, and it made me sort of like assess what I actually felt about smart locks in general. And I think I have some frustrations with it, but overall, I feel like it was a good addition to our smart tech setup here. I was really squeamish about smart locks for a long time because I felt like there were lots of security problems. And the more I thought about it, the less I was like, well, I mean, I don't know. I'm not living in like Fort Knox or anything, right?
What have I got to lose?
If somebody wants to break into my house, they're going to break into my house. It doesn't matter if I have a smart lock or a normal lock. They can break a window. They can pick a lock. Like, if somebody is determined to get in, I feel like it's going to happen. Yeah. So
I have seen studies that say that people who have security systems and whatnot tend to get broken into more often.
Yeah,
because they have things that are worth stealing.
Well, that's a good point. That's a good point. I got nothing. My door is an open door.
Yeah,
no, my house
an
is an
door.
Open door.
What if you made your door? What if you painted your door like a book? Then you could say your door is an open.
My
book.
House is an open book. I will say that the one thing that I'm hopeful about for future developments of smart locks is like that thing Apple added where you can use essentially kind of like Apple Pay, right? Like you can use the NFC chip to open your door. I think that's more appealing to me. So I'm potentially interested down the road in having that because like I like the idea of being able to like wave my watch at the door and the door is like, that's where you are and unlocked.
I know. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Feel like
I think Glenn Fleischman actually wrote something about that just before the Apple Watch came out, suggesting that might be something in the future, and it really hasn't happened yet. So I mean, that's been how long have you been away from Mackerel, Dan?
A while. It has been a while. I think that like they made a big play at this last year because they added, like, I guess support for like car keys, home keys, and hotel keys. So, but I think the problem is it's infrastructure, right? Like, most people don't replace their car very often. Hotels
most hotels
locks.
Still have dock connector.
Yeah, well, I mean,
speakers in the room.
I thought it was nice that they got to a point with hotels where you could have like RFID based cards, right, as opposed to the old swipe cards. Right, where I remember going to hotels, and I think this still happens. Like your card could get demagnetized, and you'd have go down the desk and be like, "Yeah, can you just
yeah, that's true." I don't know if I've had that happen recently, but we had that happen a lot.
I mean, I haven't been to a hotel in
that's
in
part
some
of
time.
It. Yeah,
but most of the ones I feel like any of the sort of more recent hotels I've been to, I feel like they much more like have the sort of just wireless ones you tap. And it works pretty well.
Yeah, well, we drove across the country last summer, actually, when it seemed like the virus was going away. And we stayed in a bunch of hotels then, and I don't think we had any trouble, but we have frequently had numerous problems with the the demagnetization thing. So maybe that has been ironed out a little bit.
Maybe you're a demagnetizer.
If I am, I'm losing my magnetization.
Oh, that's it happens to all of us eventually.
I love that REM album.
Yeah, I don't know. It strikes me as something that does make sense, like in terms of being able to use your watch to open a lot of things. This whole sort of like authentication setup that Apple has kind of like, I wrote about this several years ago, but like they've created this web of authentication, right? Because now your watch can unlock your phone. And your phone can unlock your watch.
And, which always confuses me.
Yeah, I don't really understand that sometimes. But then you have the Face ID now, which is going to be rolling out at some point in the next few weeks, where it will be able to unlock your phone while you're wearing a mask. Just in time for some people to stop wearing masks.
For mask mandates, too. Yeah, exactly.
But,
yeah.
You know, long term, hopefully that's something that doesn't...
Definitely coming back, right?
Yeah, I mean, we'll put it this way. It's something that could, like...
Be optimistic, Dan.
But, like, in the sense that in the future, if, say, people are more willing to wear masks when they're sick, regardless of what they're sick with, then at least maybe that doesn't disincentivize it, right? They're like, look, your phone will still work.
Right, just wear
a mask.
Okay, yeah, like, I can't wear a mask. I've got to get
to my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I got to read my email.
I'm not... If I don't unlock my phone, am I even alive?
If I don't post on Twitter at least once an hour, will people think I'm dead?
Are you sub-talking me?
Yeah. Will they send the police to my house? Well, we don't currently have a Apple event scheduled, but rumor has it that March 8th is still the moment that's going to happen. And I wrote the Macworld piece I've got coming out next week.
It's getting close.
It should be next week, usually.
Yeah.
So I wrote a Macworld piece next week, just sort of looking at the current state of the Apple Silicon transition and just sort of what to expect from sort of the next stages, both in terms of like which models might roll out, mm-hmm. but also in terms of like the progression of processors, right? Like looking at the stuff we've seen so far, right? Like the M1 followed by the M1 Pro and the M1 Max, and then comparing that sort of with also the mobile development of the mobile chips over the last decade, right? Where they do sort of that TikTok thing where they have like the A4, the A4X,
right.
You know, et cetera. And trying to sort of extrapolate from that where stuff is going. I still find myself a little curious about some of the rumors that have surfaced about Macs that might show up in the next couple of weeks. You and I did talk about this, but on the rebound, but the 13-inch MacBook Pro that people are like, yeah, but it's still got a touch bar. And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Why?
That's very baffling to me.
I just can't imagine any reason they would do that. It seems nonsensical.
Right.
Because
they had one previously without the touch bar.
Right. I mean, if
it's a design issue, they have the whatever it is they need.
And it's presumably more expensive to make the touch bar.
Right.
Why would they not just save themselves the money and, you know, not make it?
Yeah. I mean, it's possible that that particular rumor is just wrong.
What? No. That's not how this works.
As someone who wrote a phony rumor site for a long time, Dan, I'm here to tell you, it happens from time to time.
I have been reporting a lot of crazy Apple rumors as fact, and that's on me. That's my bad.
Yeah.
So you have an Apple Silicon Mac.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's the only one in the house, actually. Yeah, I have a MacBook Air. Yeah.
And is that what you use for basically everything these days? I mean, I know
pretty much. I have an Intel based Mac Mini that is my Plex server for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have 10,000 other older, much older Macs.
Most of them aren't even running on Intel chips.
No, most of them are running Intel chips, although I've been playing around with some very old ones because I got that device that Jason got, the floppy Emu. And I've been having trouble with it. He and Chris Breen didn't seem to have any problems with theirs, but for some reason it's not working right for me. So I'm going to have to send it back.
It's possible you demagnetized it.
I'm not sure you can demagnetize a flash drive.
I mean, floppies, man.
But they're virtual floppies, Dan. They're not giving you the real floppies experience, right?
Where it's like all the way down to corrupted floppies.
Yeah, you had asked if I got the thing that made the noise that sounded like it was accessing a floppy drive. I did not.
It amuses me vastly that that is a thing that is actually.
I think that's fantastic.
It's really good.
That's absolutely delightful. I have to admit,
it tempted me with the idea of like. I only have, the only old Mac I have sitting around is a Power Mac G3, which will run classic Mac OS if I were so inclined. But I did make me, I have to admit, the Jason stuff and watching other people sort of play around with it did make me nostalgic for the days of going over to my friend's house and playing games on his SE30. Because there is certainly a feel and a... on a just a whole flavor of that that even if you run classic Mac OS on something like a Power Mac G3, right, it's OS 9, you know, so it's pretty not modern, but it's like a newer version, right? Like it's not the same as sort of the retro, you know, stuff from my childhood.
It'll still crash like crazy. just like Mac OS 6.
Oh man. Yeah, that was a
Macintosh operating system.
Thank you very much. The first computer I ever had was an LC, and it shipped with System 7, and it couldn't really handle System 7, which was pretty funny. Like I think it shipped with 2 megabytes of RAM, and it was struggling. So I had to downgrade it to 6.0.7 in order to get, and I had to use it that way for like, I don't remember, maybe a year. Until we, you know, basically I convinced my parents they had to buy like 2 more megabytes of RAM to put into it.
Can you imagine?
Yeah. And then I could get finally back to color.
Must be nice.
Well, it was one of those silly things where like I had one of the cool things with the LC, right? It was supposedly, hence the term LC, it was the low cost color, you know, version. And to downgrade to 6.0.7, which there was some color support, but it was not like the system was not in color and a lot of stuff would not run. And so it felt dumb that we had, like, you know, bought this computer on the premise of it being able to display color and downgrade to a black and white operating system.
Yeah. I had that machine. I must have gotten it with four, though, because I had an SE FDHD. That's a mouthful, which is actually, and I have that again now. It's not the exact same machine, but it's close to the same model. And that had, as I recall, 2.5 megabytes of RAM. Ooh. And then I sold that and got the ALC. So I'm pretty sure I didn't go down in RAM. So I must have gone with four.
Yeah, the ALC was not an amazing computer, but
no, it really wasn't.
Yeah, I had a string of bad Macs because I had that, and I had a Performa after that was real. Real crap. Like,
yeah,
it broke. Like several things broke in there. The logic board went. Part of the monitor went. Like I had to have that one repaired a bunch of times.
Yeah. Yeah. There were. I mean, that was a endemic problem in the 90s for them, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, looking back on it, it is kind of charming in the fact that those things were so bad. Like also the fact that I guess I feel like I probably did research, but at the same time, I'm not sure how much weight my research carried with, you know, my dad who was making the actual purchases.
Sure.
I don't remember, like, because not that my dad was a super technical guy. I don't think he still doesn't really know that much about computers, but like, you know, he was going to be making the budget decisions.
Yeah.
I could point him towards what I wanted, but it wasn't like I was necessarily guaranteed to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was making all the, I was in graduate school when I got, so mm-hmm. I was buying that stuff and I think I still wasn't making the right decisions. Because,
how about now?
I didn't get an SE30. I bought something that I could afford. So I mean that was a trade off. But I don't think at the time that I bought the SE, I didn't really know the difference between that and an SE30. Mm-hmm. I at least was getting, you know, I was getting better floppy drives. Like I could read 1.44 megabyte disks, but I wasn't getting the faster processor.
Right.
So and then I bought the LC, which was not like, you know. The LC2, I think, was actually a decent machine, right? Yeah, correctly.
I'm trying to remember which processor the LC even had, but it wasn't. I think it was a 20?
I don't think it was very good.
Yeah.
I can't remember those numbers very.
I know. It was a 680-30. Well,
I knew them at the time, but now it's like, again.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just name them M1?
Yeah, it was a 680-20. It was not a very. So it was as a worse processor than the SE30.
Yeah.
So. But it was cheap, right? They were doing it on a budget.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And I got mine. I remember I got mine on sale from them because the LC2 was about to come out. And I got it on sale from the University of Washington. So I was getting it even cheaper than.
Yeah, my dad was buying stuff because he worked at a university. So he would get the education discounts and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, meager as they sometimes were. I was looking, according to Wikipedia, the price of the LC was $2,500, which is equivalent today to almost $5,000 in 2020 dollars.
And I bought, like I said, I bought my SE used, and it did have a 30 megabyte external hard drive, which was kind of cool.
That was a big deal at that point.
Yeah, it had two floppy drives and an external hard drive. So that was a nice, you know, despite the fact that the processor wasn't that fast, it was a good machine, and I paid $2,000 for it used. But back then, that was not a bad deal.
Right. Yeah, I feel like there was a long time where pretty consistently, and I think in some ways Apple has kind of stuck with this, like price points of certain computers stayed the same for a super long time. Like I actually have over here somewhere, I think I sent you a picture of this at one point, the spec sheet for the G3 tower I have, which I got in college, and like I think that one probably also cost around $2,500. Now the difference between those two machines in performance is, you know, like it's like a decade, but it is also, they did like stake out those price points for a long time. So I always felt like I was spending around the same amount of money, but I continually getting more bang for my buck. I guess.
I
mean, even this iMac that I'm sitting in front of, I think I paid $2,500 for 5 years ago. That seems to be about my budget, I think, for a desktop Mac. It's about $2,500.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I used to pay that, but
it's a lot.
Paid that in a long time. I mean, I got that Mac Mini, and that was a pretty good, you know, was that like, I think it was like $800 or something like that.
Yeah.
I already had a monitor sitting around, so I didn't even have to buy a monitor. I obviously didn't have to buy a keyboard and mouse, so.
Yeah, I mean, when I had a Mini, I almost never hooked it up to a monitor. It was hooked up to my TV for a long time. Because I didn't,
yeah, that was a popular thing to do for a long time.
It worked pretty well until it started dying. But
well, and then they got rid of Front Row,
right? Yeah, but it did have an HDMI port on the later versions, which was nicer. Like the first one I had, which was an Intel one, I had to do this stupid thing where it was like DVI out to a. I don't know. There was some weird thing I had it where like I had to have HDMI to DVI.
I have the first Intel Mini. Yeah. And I did do that for a little while. Yeah. I had like a host of adapters that were
which is a pain.
Sticking out of the back of that thing.
But yeah, I'm interested to see if Apple, one of these models, I'm guessing is maybe an upgraded Mini. I mean, because there's still that Intel Mini at the top.
Right. Yeah.
And it seems as though there's no reason for them not to say, hey, let's do a Mini that has maybe some, you know, an M1 Pro chip in it or something like that.
Right.
For a, you know, in that $800 range or whatever they're charging for a high-end Mini.
There was another thing. Was this a, I only saw it in passing, but it was about, it must have just been a patent filing or something.
Oh, is the keyboard?
The keyboard,
So like a keyboard, like basically like a old Commodore where like the whole computer's in the keyboard.
Yes.
Yeah,
right.
I saw that as well. I thought that was really
interesting. It was a patent.
Sure. Probably never going to happen, but kind of a cool idea.
No, I wouldn't think so, right? I mean, and with Apple's history with keyboards, it's like, would you want one that was completely tied into the unit? It seems like that's just asking for trouble again.
My favorite detail about this, I think they mentioned, was it would have in it, I think, a projector. Like somebody mentioned it could have a projector in it or something that, I don't know, maybe. Let's see. Keyboard is virtually displayed from a projector inside the enclosure. That would be bizarre.
That seems, well,
I know.
That seems
the whole thing seems
not
kind of
feasible
ridiculous.
Either because, I mean, you know, how many times do you want to move your keyboard? I move my keyboard all the time. I move my laptop all the time.
You'd also need like a wall or something to project it
onto. Right. I don't think that's going to work in very many situations.
I mean, what you could do in theory would be kind of interesting would be a standalone, like a computer and a keyboard that has built in like AirPlay support or something where maybe you could hit a button and it would like discover a local like AirPlay screen and you could like put it up on your TV or something. I don't know. Like, I just can't
AirPlay device for $10,000.
But I can't imagine otherwise. You're just gonna. otherwise you have to connect this to a monitor. Again, yeah. Still not a thing that Apple released. I bought a keyboard, computer, and a $6,000 Pro Display XDR.
And then you're really... just moving from a wireless keyboard probably to a keyboard with a wire.
Right.
Unless it does have some sort of AirPlay support.
Yeah, exactly. It seems strange. I'm not really sure what the
I mean, every once in a while, they do weird things like putting the Ethernet port into the power adapter of the iMac. I mean, so it's possible they could like ship this thing and then some like wireless dongle that you connect to, you know, that is an AirPlay receiver, and you could connect that way, and you know, have the ability to move the device around without like yanking your TV off the stand,
but. That would
overall, this seems a little far-fetched.
Yeah, I don't see a actual application for this in terms of like where this would fit in Apple's lineup. I think it's just a patent because they're like, oh, this is an interesting idea. Let's see if we can do it. But I do think, you know, compared especially to other stuff that it's doing right now, like universal control, which seems like. This is a how would that mesh with that, right? Where it's like, well, I can use this keyboard to control any of my devices, like,
yeah,
yeah, I don't know. Apple tries a lot of things, and unlike you know, some other places that put those out as products, Apple just sort of was like, we'll try it.
It's not gonna work, yeah. I mean, it might it exists, it probably exists in some form,
sure.
Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have bothered to patent it, I wouldn't think, but
yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good idea.
Yeah. It's neat. I mean, I like those ideas. Yeah. You know, I like seeing people who, I mean, there was a YouTube video I saw this week of a guy who made a portable out of a Mac Mini, which was kind of fun. And he used an iPad Mini as the screen because apparently the iPad Mini is exactly the same size across the top as the Mac Mini. So it, you know, he had to build he 3D printed a hinge to attach it to the device, and then got some keyboard, and you know, it's just fun. It's just,
well, there was
dumb
the one,
fun. It's not something that's gonna, you know, he's not gonna make a bunch of them and sell them. Or
wasn't there one a few weeks ago where somebody put a iPad in an old iBook, color iBooks.
Yes,
that was
cool, I remember. That was cool, and also I was like, I'm not sure I like him ripping that unit apart.
took it very personally.
That's a perfectly fine computer. Leave it alone.
Yeah,
unless it doesn't work. You know, I mean, like, you know,
yeah,
mine barely
parts.
Works.
It's just parts. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that. I saw also there was a story going around that was scrolling back. Oh, it's the to get a foldable MacBook. And I had that moment of being like, first of all MacBooks are foldable. Let's be clear. But I guess the idea would be like, it's the going back to the like sort of glass halves on both sides. And I kind of sigh at that because, you know, I feel like I'm hoping Apple's learned its lesson about trying to really over-engineer keyboards, as we were just discussing.
Yes.
Like,
right.
The iPad keyboard is fine. The on-screen keyboard, it's fine. But it's not good, in my opinion.
Right.
It is something that's like, it is within the constraints of the device you have created. And for those parameters, it's pretty good. But give me, if I'm doing anything longer than typing an email, give me a physical keyboard any day.
I don't even want to type an email though. I mean, you know, even texts sometimes, like if I want to type like a decent explanation in the text, I want to go to my Mac.
Sure. Yeah. No, I had the same thing the other day. A friend of mine on Slack was asking for some tech advice about a problem he was having with some like monitors. And I started typing something on my phone and was like, and then we got into a discussion that we were clearly talking at cross purposes about like what he was trying to do. And I was like, I should not have answered this from my phone.
I can't
type enough that like I actually need to compose a thought, and like it was just frustrating. I eventually switched to my Mac. I was like, I'm really sorry that I was typing from my phone because I feel like I couldn't actually address this problem. So anything that's longer than like a shortest of text, I often want to switch to a physical keyboard. So
yeah, I haven't, like, I remember in the early days of the, you know, when was playing around with iPhones to begin with, I occasionally would attach a keyboard, you know, via Bluetooth to my iPhone. And I haven't done that in a million years.
It's just,
and I think it's probably just because the iPad's there. Like, if I want to type on iOS, I would, and I have the Magic Keyboard, and the Magic Keyboard is great.
But when, yeah, when are you in a scenario where you have your
phone? It just doesn't,
and a keyboard and no other devices.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know. I mean, I know people who, like, I know a guy who wrote his first book on I was one of those like unfoldable keyboards. I think that you could put like pair with a smartphone 10, 15 years ago, pre iPhone.
Yeah.
And he would like write on the subway on the way to his old job.
Yeah.
And he wrote an entire book that way. And I think, you know, it's great. It's great for the era, right? Like, it's great for the time in which that was done. But today it feels like something that would just be ridiculous.
Yeah. I had, I don't remember if this was what first keyboard I had with my original iPad, but I think I had the Apple wireless keyboard.
Yeah, the old
one.
Time.
Yeah, the older one, right. And I used to take it on the train when I was working in Seattle, and I would write, you know, like Macworld stuff while I was doing it. And I remember I had the iPad propped up on the little table on the train, and, you know, it's like four of you sitting there in a fairly crowded train. And, you know, I have the keyboard on my lap and I'm typing away. And this woman took a picture of me doing it. And what was so funny about it was, like, she clearly thought that it was very unusual for some reason. I don't know if she thought, look at this nerd, or if she thought that was neat or whatever. But she takes this picture of me, and she had forgotten to turn off her flash. And she quickly got off at the next stop.
That wasn't even her stop.
It was a switching station.
Train didn't even stop. Slow
She's
down.
Still standing there now.
No, I did once. I didn't, not to, you know, mock too much, but I did. I used to go to a coffee shop to do some like writing and work back in the day. Obviously, well pre-pandemic. And I remember seeing there was a guy who would come in a couple times with an iMac.
It was
like a iMac G5, like the big white ones. And I would just be sitting there thinking, okay.
Yeah, people, I mean, like, I always thought there was like one person, like, you know, someone had taken a picture of the guy who brought the iMac to a coffee shop. But it's like, I looked up that picture online a few months back. Maybe we were talking about it. And there were like, you know, like a dozen pictures of different people with
not
IMAX
uncommon.
Coffee shops.
I mean, if that's all you got and that was the computer you can afford and you needed it to be portable, you know what? More power to
you. And that was your place to work. I mean, you know, people who have kids or whatever, I mean, maybe you can't, and they're young kids and you have a job that you work remotely or whatever, and you can't work at home because the kids are running around screaming. I guess that's an option.
I mean, and to be fair, an iMac of all desktops, that, like, it's not like people were like rolling in a cart
seriously.
With a Mac
Pro
or something.
A tower. A Dell tower with
never
27 different wires
that
connected to it.
I have not seen. But like, at least the iMac only requires basically one cable, right? Like, if you can find a power plug, then you're good. That was the biggest thing that was to me was like, it was always a struggle to get power outlets in the coffee shop. And it's like, I'm glad that you found a seat with a power because you're not
That guy gets there early.
Yeah, I would assume so. I think you got to plan ahead for that.
But
it's funny to me too now because like I always used to husband my time very carefully when it was like, how much battery life do I have? Will I be able to find a power outlet? And these days with like the M1 MacBook Air, I mean, granted, I don't leave my house. But if I did, I'm basically never concerned about battery life because
that's the thing. Like, I worry about my battery because I plug it in so much because I don't leave the house. It's like I should be draining it down further than I am because that's better for the battery life.
Right. I definitely have noticed it's not as good on my M1 Air as it was like when I first got it. But that's, you know, that's life.
And even the OS tells me, you know, it's like, I'm not charging this up past 80. You're going to be connected. I refuse. You're connected constantly. I don't.
I'm not charging this.
Yeah, right. It's don't look at me. Look
Easy,
at yourself.
Buddy.
Go look in the mirror.
Yeah. Well,
but the one thing I would say, like, you were talking about like typing on glass and Apple, you know, possibly like switching to sort of virtual keyboards. The only time I get nervous about that is when I go to the Apple store and I see the people who work in there typing on, you know, typing up tickets when you have to go to the Genius.
Right. And they got their iPads. Yeah.
Yeah. They got their iPads and they are really fast at it.
So you think it's us is what you're saying.
Well, that's what I'm afraid of. I'm afraid that, like, that's one of the, you know, that's an old man thing. And I mean, we're going to be left in the dust at some point when everybody switches to glass keyboards.
Yeah, man, glass is where it's at. You don't want that tactile feedback. It really...
Right.
It's too much. I don't know. I don't even know what the good argument against it is, but yeah.
No.
Too many moving pieces.
Yeah.
Good for Apple, not good for the rest of us. Well, I'm holding out hope that there is an event announced next week and that I really got my fingers crossed for that larger iMac, or at the very least a more powerful.
You've been waiting
iMac.
A long time, Dan.
I know. But I realize it's the end of the transition. So like it was June 2020 at WWDC was when the M1 was announced, or at least the transition was announced, I should say. And Tim Cook said, like, we've got a 2-year transition planned, I think. So we're coming up on 2 years.
Right.
And like, knowing Apple, if they had supply chain problems or whatever and extended it so it was like the end of 2022, and they're like, well, two calendar years or whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
But I think they'd love to put a capper on it at WWDC this year, especially because that's a great place to announce a Mac Pro, right? Like, that's an audience that is going to appreciate it. Mm-hmm. So makes me wonder if, like, well, if they're going to basically finish the transition by then, assuming, again, the Mac Pro is the last to be moved because it's the most powerful,
which
it seems likely.
Think, yeah.
Then it's not out of the question that, like, you know, they could knock off a couple things at this spring event, which is really, I guess, the Mac Mini and the larger iMac, if they're going to do one. But I guess that larger iMac could come with a Mac Pro in June. They could be like, here are our offerings for pros. We've got a larger iMac and we've got a Mac Pro, you know? So,
yeah.
Not really sure which way it's going to go, but I could see those scenarios both sort of playing out.
Well, good luck.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
I know you got a lot of skin in this game.
I do. I'm big into iMac. I've put a lot of money into iMac. Let me tell you, bet it all on red. I don't know,
like, the difference between, like, if there's a Pro, another iMac Pro, mm-hmm. or just a larger iMac, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a marketing
thing. I mean, I guess it's more of a branding thing, like, will they brand it iMac Pro?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, because they only ever made one iMac Pro model, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it had different configurations, whatever, but, like, they only ever made that as a thing once, and it was mainly there as, like, a stopgap, because the redesigned, like, going from the trash can Mac Pro to the newer Mac Pro, like, it was just going to take too much time.
Yeah.
So,
well, and
like,
I think given their reticence to make monitors, it, at least to date, there's actually really room for an iMac Pro.
Yeah. Still. No, I agree. I wouldn't be shocked if they decided, like, that 27-inch iMac is now the iMac Pro. And it just has different configuration options. Also, wouldn't be surprised.
I mean,
they make
a monitor. They make a monitor, obviously, but it's priced out of everybody's.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure how many people buy that monitor.
I mean, there's still talk that they might try to make a cheaper one.
Yes.
But even a cheaper one's going to cost probably a couple thousand dollars.
Right.
It's cheap by comparison. It's not cheap.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that 27-inch could be an iMac Pro. There could be a couple different configurations. There could be... Who knows? Maybe they could do a 30-inch that's an iMac Pro and then just a 27-inch that's sort of a mid-range iMac.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. They could really do anything. But I do suspect, part of me thinks that the Macs coming out in March would be like that higher-end Intel Mac Mini, a 24-inch iMac that has M1 Pro, maybe M1 Max configuration options, sort of like it's more power, but in the same sort of chassis. And then... That there is still a rumor of a laptop floating around there, and that one's more perplexing to me because I guess that 13-inch MacBook Pro could get revamped maybe with M1 Pro and M1 Max configurations as well, or maybe slightly redesigned so it looks more like the 14 and 16, but it's still a weird device.
It is.
I don't really know where they're going with that.
I don't either.
It looks old. It
the
looks,
touch bar.
Right. The touch bar, it looks older. It does because it hasn't been redesigned. And if you do redesign it, it's like, well, is there enough headroom between the 13 and the 14-inch at that point? Like,
right.
I don't know.
Yeah. Go back to the 12.
I missed my...
With a square aspect ratio.
Oh. 4:3 with a CRT monitor. No. Let's get back into those classic Macs.
I think they'll definitely do that, won't they?
Well, all right. We've probably babbled on about classic Macs long enough. Yeah, this is the classic Mac podcast.
I could go on for another hour, Dan.
Well, we'll be back to talk about that at some point. We'll have a classic Mac show. How about that?
Excellent. Sounds good.
Can talk about all your game picks for your classic Mac. Well, just say thanks everybody out there for supporting the site and listening to the podcast. Jason's away this week, which is why John was so gracious about filling in. But he will be back next week. And until then, bye, John.
Bye, Dan.